Hello and welcome to Riley on Film. I'm your host, Damian Riley. I've written two books so far and currently I'm on my third. I'm not in film or on film, yet one day, who knows, lightning could strike. I am a bipolar professional here putting up my thoughts about human life. I hope you enjoy your time here. Namaste and God bless you. I should learn to not record anything about a movie until I have finished it. Especially if I give it the praise of possibly being my number one favorite movie of all time. Because, alas, when I finished Poor Things with Emma Stone, I realized that it will certainly not be in my top 1, top 3, top 5, probably maybe be in the top 10. Just because it's so fucking different. It is very different. And, you know, I haven't even looked. Because I want to compare it to Tim Burton. But I just know in my soul it's not Tim Burton. It's more avant-garde, but I haven't even looked at the director. And I'm a little bit different than other movie reviewers. I don't go to painstaking lengths to check, you know, and look up on Internet Movie Database who the director of everything is. Usually I know because I've somehow seen it as I've researched the movie. But this one, only reason I started being interested in it is because it was an Oscar-nominated movie. And Emma Stone, I didn't like her in Easy A. I don't know why I didn't like her in Easy A. I should like her in Easy A, but something about it, I just felt like it was kind of a rip-off, bait-and-switch type of marketing of that movie. But, can I just say I didn't like it without having to analyze for once? I just didn't like it that much, okay? Everybody likes Emma Stone, and I do like Emma Stone. She's America's sweetheart. She's one of America's sweetheart. Like a Reese Witherspoon, you know, she's right in that same category. This movie puts her in a definitely more respectable category, as far as I'm concerned. A more artistic kitten. More willing to go outside the lines. More willing to shop at Tippy Canoes instead of Target down on PCH in Laguna Beach. She has achieved a different level for me, and I will always be a fan of hers, and man, I could gush on her just watching this movie and being done with it and just telling you good things about her. She is incredible. You know what's kind of funny? Is that Willem Dafoe was kind of a similar dog for me. I appreciate that he was in The Last Temptation of Christ, because that presents an alternate idea of what could have possibly transpired with Jesus as a historical figure. At the time it came out, it was very Christian, very right-wing, very Reagan years. I was 10 years old in 1980. I was 20 years old in 1990. So my coming of age and getting awareness of politics was in the Reagan years. And it was a very conservative time. So I don't really know why I even brought up politics. It doesn't have anything to do with this. But getting back to Emma Stone in this movie, I got to like her so much after watching this movie. And I got to like Willem Dafoe, despite my little boy Christian cute acolyte outfit, you know, just adherence in my spinal column to Christianity. And so I sort of resented him for being in The Last Temptation of Christ. And it's so funny how in a lifetime you can go from the left to the right and then back to the left again in the course of a lifetime. I don't know where I'll end up, but, you know, certainly knowledge is better than ignorance. And I think one thing that I do, and every now and then I tell my students this, I say, this is not a judgment, but I just kind of wish in America there was sort of a requirement to take a multi-ethnic religions class, like in high school. Because we have these, like, rabid young kids that go to the Christian clubs and stuff, and I was that kid, so I don't really have anything against them. There's a lot of positives, but there are other ways of apprehending the universe, and you know, something you call God, maybe with a lowercase, or maybe as a woman, or maybe just something altogether outside of the Bible, or maybe just the shape of things we look at. Maybe you might look at that as your higher power. That's getting close to maybe where I'm at. The other day I was thinking about, what is my higher power? I was thinking, after 54 years, unfortunately, don't tell my mom and dad, but it's not Jesus. I was thinking my higher power is probably the space between the planets. I think about that, and I think that's a higher power than anything I could comprehend, the space between the planets. And then you think, that's just the Milky Way. And then when you look at the Webb telescope, you see billions of universes, just like the Milky Way. And so the space between those planets, and it's so vast that there's a peace in it for me. I don't really know how to evangelize you to find that peace. You'll have to find it on your own. But underneath these lights of my life, the space between the planets is an example of something I meditate on as my higher power. So anyway, now that many of you have labeled me a Satanist, which I'm, I don't know, it's like Billy Joel said, I'd rather, you know, burn with the sinners than sit in a museum with the saints or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, and then, of course, Michael Stipe says in Burning Hell, he says all the best people are burning down in hell. I don't know. I don't really believe in hell. But I think hell is right now, and most Christians are living in their own hell right now and trying to get out of it. But anyway, I have no offense. I love all people. I love all people. I love all people. Let's get back to Poor Things. So here we are going back to Poor Things, and meditation is a good thing. I recommend it. This is my little evangelical voice. I don't know if it will ever die, but Christianity is evangelical. Buddhism is not. Of course, everybody wants you to give to their cause, and Buddhism is no different, but there's no requirement. There's no call, great call to be a house upon the hill and all that. There's just you and your spinal cord, and let's get it together, and let's settle up, and you're going to die, and you're going to get sick, and you might get cancer, and you're going to have all these problems, and that somehow you find a way while you're sitting in a half lotus in my situation, to make that okay. There's a documentary on PBS. I think it's on Prime. It's on one of the services. It's pretty accessible. I think they even have it on YouTube for free. So check it out if you're interested in Buddhism, because I think it's called The Buddha, and it's narrated by Richard Gere. You know, the John in Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts. That's Richard Gere. He's like a world-renowned Buddhist now. I kind of like that because, you know, I mean, I don't like it that I'm white, but I happen to be white Irish, and he's white Irish. So, you know, you always think of Buddhism as like people from, you know, the Asian area of the world, but, you know, it can affect it. It can be, you know, practiced by anybody. They call it a practice. That's another thing I like. It's not a go down to the floor and you do your altar call and receive the Lord because you're a sinner and his blood will save you. And, you know, that's pretty neat. I've done it. But Buddhism says, let's just find a way to be okay with what is. And let's try to not look at things as we want them to be, but as they are. It's not that easy, but here I am evangelizing again. Get a book. Learn it for yourself. That's what I've done. So anyways, what does that mean? So anyway, Poor Things, really, really amazing film. I would even maybe put it in my top three. I'm going to make a decision on that probably through time. But it could go in my top three just because it's so different. I would put it akin to Tim Burton, but Tim Burton doesn't have nudity. And there's a lot of nudity. There's a lot of sex scenes. There is a whole segment of the movie that focuses close fisheye lens on the act of sex within a brothel with Emma Stone having mental thoughts while she's being fucked. So, yeah. So it's definitely not for kids. earlier today when I was watching, I was so excited because it really is like Alice in Wonderland. It's like through the looking glass. It's looking at everything logically that we encounter in life, and it's M.C. Escher, and it's Pablo Picasso, and it's just dripping weirdness at every turn. It has these animals that are not right. They're like, I think it was a duck head and a dog body, like a pug dog's body from like the Men in Black pug. And then it has a duck head and it just waddles around and it just looks like something painted from Beatrix Potter and then animated. And I really like this movie. I know a lot of people have already probably turned this off because I said fuck, but it's very freeing to watch this movie because you go into all these like possible scenarios of thought, of logic. And I love logic. I don't, you know, when people hear that, they probably think, oh, he's a logician. He's like mathematical. No, logic. I like the kind of logic where you can produce any answer, but you still have to do it with logic. And you'd probably have to take my logic class to see how we get there. But if you look at Stephen Toulmin, you can Google him. He has a very clear way to examine an argument and develop an argument. And I think in this world today, you know, where people think Trumpism is a religion, still I'm finding these diehards are like unfriending me. And if I say anything against his holy orangeness, his holy orange rapistness, he's an, you know, adjudicated rapist. I don't think people really think about that, but Trump was found in a judicial setting by a jury of his peers to have raped Jean, I forget her name, but the woman. And as a result, he blew her off and he insulted her in public at his rallies. And so she took him back to court. And now he only owed $8 million. Now he owes upwards of $100 million to her. And he's still going out and doing his rallies. So they're thinking maybe we'll take him back again. But he has nothing now. All his money has been depleted from his 90-something odd. Let's underline odd, but it's been in another way. It's a multiple meaning word in this case. But 90-something odd felony counts that he's facing in different lawsuits. So we've gotten through the civil trials. Now we're in the criminal part of it. And the guy is completely unfazed. And I have people, I certainly won't name names, but that I've known through the years up here, because it's Trump country up here. It really is. But it's Trump country in San Clemente, too. Like, when I go down, you know, see my parents, I see stickers and crazy-ass people on PCH with their flags and shit. So, I mean, it's an infection. We have an infection in our country. And I don't think it's going to kill us, but it sure hurts a lot of people. We got to hurt him. We got to get him. We got to pluck out the whitehead of our country. And then we'll see, you know, what can heal from that. But anyways, I could go on and on. This is about a movie called Poor Things. It's really good. It's very open to interpretation. It's very sexual. There's a lot of stuff that a lot of people are going to turn it off when they start seeing it. And that's a bummer to me. But I think like Tim Burton doing movies for Disney now, like that's why he doesn't do nudity. That's why he's kind of scaled down his intense messages, because he's just, you know, he's Disney. And I could get sucked into Disney shit. If Disney said, hey, stop saying fuck and we'll pay you $1 million, I'd stop saying fuck. I really would. I honestly would. I have no shame. But since I make, you know, next to no money on my art, I can do what I want. So there's like a kind of a weird trade-off there. Now, this is an Academy Award-winning movie, so I think you should go see it, and I'm done talking about it. So I hope I gave everybody a very clear indication that there's nudity, there's bad language, there's definitely amoral stuff going on in this movie. Doesn't even faze me, and sometimes I forget that I have to warn people when I say this would be one of my favorite movies, that I don't have any like filters when it comes to movies. I mean, my first favorite movie when I was younger and started being conscious of a favorite movie was A River Runs Through It. That's a very plain vanilla movie. The next one was Tusk. That's a very disgusting Frankenstein, surgical, lot of blood, body mortification, things like that. And that's where he turns the passerbys into walruses surgically. And that was my favorite movie. It's been my favorite movie, gosh, over 10 years, I think. I don't know, you'd have to ask people that have followed me. I don't remember when I started saying that, but I got on a real big kick about it. And people actually asked me on their podcast specifically because they thought that was so funny that I was taking myself seriously film critic on the internet on a blog. And yet my favorite movie was Tusk. I think people thought that was funny. So they would always bring it up and say, I can't believe you like Tusk. And then we would talk about it. And then some people would get offended, mostly Christian people. But I really love that movie. That's still going to be in my top five for sure. But this movie won't be my top one. I'm still... That space is kind of open. I watched Resurrection the other day. That is a competition for up there in the top three. I wonder if I'm scarring my cats for life watching all these horror movies. But anyway, that's it. And I hope you see it. It's an Academy Award winner, and I will see you next time. It's like the longest talking about a movie I've done in a long time. 15 minutes and 47 seconds. Hello there, and thanks for listening to Riley on Film. I'm your host, Damian Riley, finding his way between bipolar and this crazy messed up world that thinks Trumpism is religion. But thanks for listening, and I hope you'll come back, and I accept all people, love all people, and I will see you next time.